Several students reported feeling bad about not being able to stabilize pure consciousness. Well, certainly there's no reason to feel good about not stabilizing pure consciousness. But one should not mentally, emotionally punish oneself for not being able to reach certain spiritual goals. I would say that certain amount of healthy discontent is positive. It motivates you to bring the necessary change. But then you're not dwelling on that discontent, but just go back to your spiritual work. Establishing pure consciousness, even though it is more or less the main first step on our path, is actually a very high achievement. We just set the bar very high in our teaching. And for good reasons. We do need to have a sense of urgency if you want to evolve, grow, come as close as possible to completion, in relative completion, let's call it that way, in that relatively short lifetime, which is also filled with numerous distractions and disturbances. So one has to respect the fact that it's not so easy to establish pure consciousness. But this should not be used as an excuse to be lazy. And to indulge in forgetfulness. But what I wanted to actually talk about is that mechanism of self-punishment, self-judgment, that so many people, including our students, have experience, feeling unworthy, having some kind of inferiority complex, deep down, somehow feeling that one does not deserve to be happy, to attain peace. Then there's this lack of self-confidence, which is very common. It's actually part of the makeup of the person. There's a fine balance between overconfidence, which is basically arrogance, and lack of confidence, not believing in oneself, not having faith in oneself. This not having faith in oneself, this lack of confidence, leads to one constantly doubting one's inner realization and experience. One is all the time uncertain. Am I experiencing the right thing? And so on and so on. Spiritual confidence, of course, wise confidence, based on an ability for discrimination, an ability to verify one's experience, is something quite different than ordinary confidence, which is orientated towards our relationship with the world. We are confident in relating to people. We may be confident how we are going to cope with the life circumstances and so, and things of that sort. Spiritual self-confidence refers to two things, primarily. One is that I have the capacity to reach spiritual awakening, have the capacity to evolve into a state of completion. And second is the confidence into who you are as the soul. Because strangely enough, one can, for instance, realize pure me of consciousness, even embodying it, but still doubting it, meaning that one is doubting into who one is. And the doubting occurs in our relationship with ourselves and how we embody these states of realization in the context of relating to the world. For instance, when you speak with someone else from pure consciousness, you need to feel, you need to know that it is your soul speaking, that you as the soul, from your soul, relate to the other person. Meaning, you represent pure subjectivity. This is how you should feel, that you represent pure subjectivity. And you need to be proud of it. Or else when you relate, even though pure consciousness may be there, you actually represent the person. Of course, you represent the person, generally speaking, but you represent that that lower level of the person, that egoic person. And that pure consciousness somewhere at the background and actually means almost nothing in that context. And that's not good. So spiritual confidence is obviously it comes from the person, from within the person, but it also involves surrender from the person to our higher subjectivity, meaning something from the person has to surrender to the soul. And when I say something, it is that control of our identity in the person on the egoic level. Ego in the sense means the part of the person that operates based on its interaction with personality and mind. How it recreates that kind of a sense of self based on these interactions, how it asserts itself and that sense of self through these interactions. Self-judgment, self-criticism, feeling guilty, feeling unworthy, feeling not good enough, and all the things, where do they actually come from? It comes from how we have developed in society. How we have been trained by society from our very childhood. I already spoke about how Freud explained these things. That there are three components in our psyche: id, ego, and superego. Id is basically represents all our desires, natural desires, drives, wants. The need to immediately satisfy what we want. It's like who we are in our inner child prior to growing up and being civilized. Superego. develops, starting from our parents, then in our school, our priests and whatnot, telling us what we must do, how we must behave, how we must present ourselves, what kind of a goals we are supposed to reach in society, and what we mustn't do, what is not allowed, what is forbidden. Now, in this training of the psyche, the development of the superego is based on the principle of punishment and reward. So when you do or behave in a way that how you are expected to, you are being rewarded in all kinds of manners, starting from the general approval that you gain from your parents or society. You are being praised, you are being accepted. When you, and the punishment represents the opposite. And it can extend to all kinds of forms, including the physical punishment, like a child can be beaten, for instance, or we can go to prison. So there's this external agency telling us what we must do and what we mustn't do. But eventually, all that information, all these principles, is being internalized. Meaning, no longer we need anyone rewarding us, because we reward ourselves if we are able to match the ideal. But that's a part of the superego, that you reach the reward, you get a reward when you attain the ideal. So when we attain that ideal, for instance, we behave as we think we should based on our conditionings or our belief system, we feel satisfied with ourselves. But when we cannot reach this ideal, or we behave in a way that is completely contrary to that ideal, then we punish ourselves. No one else, we don't need any more parents or police to punish us. We punish ourselves through the feeling of guilt, feeling unworthy, feeling horrible about ourselves. And it is not that the development of superego is something bad. It is needed. It's part of us becoming civilized. We need to learn how to live in society. And we also learn certain moral principles. But it all has to be put in context, that some of those goals that are expected from us to be rich are unrealistic. And there's no such a thing as perfect human behavior. Because there is a, oh, there's a certain conflict between id and superego. For instance, if you are a priest or a monk, so you renounce sexuality, but the id still has sexual desires. So the way you are coping with it is through repression. And you can only repress natural desires to a certain extent. After it, they boil inside you, constantly disturbing you, because you are not honoring basically your natural desires. Because you have all this, you create all that belief system, you follow certain principles that are basically unrealistic or unnatural. So here there are all these conflicts, and ego is the one which is supposed to reconcile the id with superego. And according to Freud, there is a weak ego and there is a strong ego. In his terminology, it is the ego is basically means the person. The weak ego cannot reconcile. It's constantly struggling, it's constantly in inner conflict. Strong ego is somehow able to reconcile, perhaps not completely, but is able to reach a relative harmony between the id and superego. By the way, there was in 70s created a psychology called transactional analysis, which is using the same model, just calling it differently. Well, ego is called the child, superego is called the parent, and ego is called the adult. So basically, adult ego is supposed to be able to reconcile the child with the parent within us, because all these things are internalized. It's an interesting concept, the transactional analysis, because in that view, human relations are actually transactions. We are constantly making transactions in our relationships. But anyway, my main point here is that development of guilt, self-punishment, self-judgment, self-criticism, not feeling good about ourselves, because we can never be perfect. Or I should say, we cannot never be perfect based on our ideals. So that mechanism comes from the development of the superego. So basically, in order to transform that, you need to transform that superego, which is somehow integrated into your person. Because if you don't, you will be hurting yourself. obviously it is a positive to be able for a constructive self-criticism. But that should not go to the next level where you create negative emotions towards yourself, where you actually punish yourself. Self-criticism, healthy self-criticism, is not punishment. It is just an objective way of looking at oneself. And this is why you should stop. When you then go to the next level and create a sense of guilt, you go too far. There's no use of the sense of guilt. There's no use of judging yourself. And everybody is judging themselves, more or less. Ego is very sophisticated and clever in its various strategies, because it is striving to maintain positive self-image, which is, by the way, very important concept in relationship to superego. Because positive self-image is basically certain satisfaction from oneself that one has lived up to one's expectations or expectations of others. And there's, again, nothing wrong with having a positive self-image. But the clinging to positive self-image or self-image being a substitute for true experience of worthiness, this, well, it becomes ugly. There's something in that self-image that can easily become ugly. So the ego is clinging to maintain at any cost a positive self-image. Because otherwise, it feels like it's going to get insane. It's so much dependent on that positive self-image. In certain situations, in certain people, that self-image can get broken, that positive self-image, and one moves to another extreme. One has succumbed to a negative self-image, openly, with oneself and perhaps with others. I'm just a terrible person. But most people would do everything to hold for the ideal life to the positive self-image. But the subconscious is not so sure whether it is justified. So it is constantly nagging the ego, giving him ideas that you are deceiving yourself, that you don't deserve that positive self-image. but the ego is holding into it, trying not to listen to the subconscious, or to other people who may express their criticism. So the ego is holding to the positive self-image, but at the same time it has doubts. And because the ego cannot constantly maintain the control over this self-image to hold it continuously, so that there's gaps, so the space for subconscious is more open, and self-judgment begins. Self-judging, self-punishing of any sort. And the ego comes back and is trying again to assert its positive self-image. So that this constant conflict, constant doubt. So how to resolve it? By stopping clinging to self-image. And by loving oneself. By forgiving oneself. By embracing the fact that one is not perfect, and that is in itself perfect. Who says that you need to be perfect? Your priests, your parents? Internalized within you? There's something arrogant in wanting to be perfect. What does it even mean? Of course, you do need to have create intermittently self-image in order to reflect upon yourself, whether in relation to the world or to your spiritual path. When you are lazy, you just need to recognize that fact. When you are not diligent, or even when you are not sincere, you're playing games with yourself. But you should not go to this next level, which is a feeling of guilt. Rather, you should have something like objective self-image, which does not carry this emotional negative load, or even the positive load, why you're so proud of yourself. So you can have a sense of satisfaction about yourself, which is not arrogant. You have established pure consciousness, wonderful, it's satisfying. I have done a good job. Healthy satisfaction, or vice versa. You are it takes you too long to establish pure consciousness. So you experience healthy discontentment. Not always the one does not establish pure consciousness or it takes too long, it's one's own fault. Sometimes it is. As I said, one is lazy or too much identified with personality. Not devoted to the practice and so on, but somehow, simply, sometimes, not everybody is that mature. Sometimes it is just an expression of spiritual immaturity. It's like you don't have this capacity to stabilize pure consciousness has not fully developed. Like it's like a certain muscle is not developed in your consciousness. So you need perhaps a longer time to develop that faculty. And you need to accept it because everybody has to accept their limitations. So the question is, can you have a objective discontentment about yourself without bringing into it a negative emotional charge? Because if you can, that is actually quite liberating. And all of that actually is in direct relationship to the main topic of our retreat: human consciousness and how to transform the psychosphere. Because by generating emotional negativity towards yourself, also by clinging desperately into a positive self-image, where you're constantly in this battle with these forces within you, mostly, that are threatening your positive self-image, you are creating, accumulating negative energies and impressions in your psychosphere. So that when you truly experience yourself, how you feel as a human in your human consciousness, irrespectively of your relationship with the world, then you will realize that you actually feel quite bad. Because you have contaminated your psychosphere by not being careful, by letting yourself indulge in negativity, even if that negativity has been directed towards your own very self. And that is not self-love. That is masochism.